Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N+1 studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfort, Kentucky. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multi-sport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. This week, we're going to address a topic that's new, but it's not so new. We're going to talk a little bit about depression in relation to sports and racing. And kind of a lot of people are going through a lot of different stuff right now with COVID-19, and our races have definitely been extinguished, I guess, at this point. So a lot of feels going on with that. Anyway, I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you doing today, Brian?
Dude, I'm phenomenal. I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to watch the world burn. It's great.
Let's not do that. Oh.
I'm the Joker, man. Saying. I'm the Joker to Batman.
Oh, God. All right. So, do you get any dad jokes today?
Oh, I don't have any dad jokes.
No dad jokes? Oh, man.
I'll have to come up with some dad jokes. Give me a minute or two to
rack
my brain and find some dad. That is a good idea, though.
Usually you have dad jokes. Along with being phenomenal, I'm getting used to having these jokes every week, Brian. Don't disappoint me. Come on. Well, you're thinking about dad jokes. This week, I did something I have never done before. I ran a virtual race. I've never done it before. I've never had any desire to do that. But I did the Kentucky Shines Half Marathon, and I didn't have to do it all at once, which was very appealing to me.
Okay. So, well, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's virtual. There's no telling did or how you did it.
Yeah, when I first started running, I didn't realize like what a competitive person I was, and I started running and it was like, oh, I'm actually kind of good at this. And I had no desire to do a virtual race just to get a medal for the heck of it. That just didn't, you know, really, really did not matter to me at all. So, but I did this one because a real good friend is a race director and, you know, he kind of has been a little wiped out this spring. So I was like, well, I'm going to help him. And it helped a food pantry and stuff. I was doing it just to donate the money,
yeah,
you know, more than anything. And, but it was kind of cool. I have a really nice shirt. I got a shirt, got a medal. I was like, all right, I like the shirt. So that's cool. I'll donate the medal to kids or something like that.
You're not going to like melt it down and stockpile metal for like when society completely collapses and you can. I'm just kidding.
What?
You'll have metal to be able to craft your own utensils and stuff?
No, I think I'm pretty sure I got enough silverware to carry me over for a while.
Make fish hooks so you can go fishing. You gotta be prepared for the zombie apocalypse.
You know, if that happens, they can just take me. Whatever. That's like way too far. The other thing that I did, we got four new chicks. And tell me if you think this is bad. I got four little chicks. They're adorable. We have one chicken and like half of her eggs, she's not laying with a shell on them anymore. So it's like, she's getting old. And we like our eggs. And so I got four little chicks and put them in a box last night because I didn't have a heat lamp yet. And I closed the box and realized it had like a roasted turkey on the top. Like, oh, that's kind of bad.
Future dinner.
Little tiny cute fluffy chicks are in a box with a roasted turkey.
Just their future dinner.
It was like the box that our fryer came in. I'm like, well, I don't know what this says about me, but oops, sorry, little guys. I swear we just want you for your eggs. You all, and I mean, I didn't even care what kind. I'm like, I want two yellow ones and two black ones out of the thing that's labeled all hens.
All hens, yeah.
So,
yeah, it's better than getting a rooster.
Oh, those suckers can be mean.
Yes, and loud.
Yeah. Well, we're going to probably get guinea hens later on this week. We'll get some of those chicks. Have you ever heard of guinea hen?
Why would you do that to yourself?
Because they eat ticks. They are fabulous for eating ticks.
Okay.
And
do you plan on having a lot of ticks in
the
house?
This winter was so mild. Yeah, we're going to have some ticks. I've already found them on the dogs. I found a couple on me.
So you just feed them to the hens once you pull them off?
They just take care of them. I mean, they roam. You know, we free roam them.
Yeah.
And put them up at night so everything under the sun doesn't eat them.
My wife likes to burn ticks. She hates ticks.
They're awful. They're disgusting.
Yeah, they cause problems. I remember getting Lyme disease. I probably didn't get Lyme disease, but it's something like that. I remember getting sick from a tick and going to the doctor, and he was like, I'm not going to test you for Lyme disease. It's some type of tick-borne illness. You got something. Here are some antibiotics. Go have fun.
Yeah. Well, the problem happens if you don't get those antibiotics. And, I mean, muscle, joint problems. I mean, I know an older guy that got Lyme disease and didn't know it. And it was bad.
Yeah, it's... tick-borne illnesses are weird because you'll get a fever for a few days and you'll be fine for a few days and you get fever for a few days. That's how I kind of figured it out, was the kind of falling back into that fever more than once. Mm-hmm. That's when we decided, okay, it was probably tick, time to go to the doctor and get some antibodies and get this healed up.
Yeah. And this guy, I guess, didn't realize it until it was like, wasn't diagnosed for like a year or something. And he just had all kinds of problems because he just didn't put it together.
So. Yeah, because it'll come and go.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
That's why we're getting guinea hens, just because, I mean, the year that we had like four of them 1 year, and they got kind of eaten one at a time until we were down to one, and she stayed around for like 2 years. She was great. Yeah. She hung out with the dog. I mean, when they figure out that if they stay with the big fluffy dog, who's Great Pyrenees Cross, then they stay safe. That's why we only have one chicken. She's survived just great. Hanging out with the pony and the dog. It's wild. But anyway.
Cool. Well, I found out I'm allergic to bread, but I decided to eat it anyway. I'm a glutton for punishment.
You know, if I talked long enough, you'd find a bad dad joke. That one was pretty bad.
Why was the broom late for the meeting?
I don't know.
It overswept.
The fact that you laugh at these is what is actually funny.
Because they're great, man. Horrible. They're so good.
Oh, my God. They're,
so good.
They're so bad. They're good. Any more?
That's it for now.
That's it for now? Okay. So what else have you, done this week?
This week?
Or last week? Whatever. God. Days are running together.
It's all the same to me. We've played Minecraft. We've watched movies.
You have some news at your house. What did your son learn how to do?
That's true. My son finally learned to ride his bike. It was so exciting. I tried pushing on him a couple times a year or two earlier, and he always fought it. But this time, for whatever reason, he decided to take it up, and within, I guess, an hour, he was riding. Because I was doing some gliding with him. We took the pedals off and had him just kind of push off and do some of that. And then I went for a bike ride and came back an hour and a half later, and he was riding his bike up and down the driveway. So I don't know.
And your wife had put the pedals on?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And that was pretty cool. Yeah, I got back from a bike ride, and I'm sitting there watching him ride up and down the driveway. I'm like, wow, that's cool.
You couldn't do that 2 hours ago. Sweet.
And now he's been wanting to ride every day since.
Yes.
Every chance he gets.
That's awesome.
So at least we're not playing Minecraft for a few days.
As long as he's going to be bummed when it's raining tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be back to Minecraft at that point and YouTube videos.
Yeah.
That's
but that's
cool.
That's awesome. I'm so glad he's...
Yeah, he's very happy. It was hilarious. He was... we were riding and he was... We got going and there's some hills right around this house where we live. And he was going down a hill and he was flying and he was loving it. And he's like... I underestimated how fast these bikes were. I thought these other things, the push.
He says something other to me devices. About that. Like, yeah, the scooter.
His scooter, he had stuff. What he called the dune buggy, the four-wheeler he had.
Yeah.
He thought those were super fast. But he's like, I underestimated the speed of a bike. of course, like the first night out, we're riding a lot, and then he does a nice crash and just tears his knees. But he was in good spirits about it. He cried for a minute or two. We sat on the side of the road and got back up and
he told me that you took a picture of his bloody legs.
Oh, I did. I got to show you my picture of his bloody legs. This is for posterity. It's the price. The price of learning to bike. He's like, oh, okay. it's like everything has a price.
It's all right. You're fine. Get back up. It's kind of like getting launched off a horse. You know, you get back on, do it again. As long as you don't have a concussion. Nothing major's wrong. Well, that's good. Congratulations. I'm so glad that he...
Yeah, it's good. I got him a new bike coming. Because he's on a 16-inch BMX bike, and he really needs probably a 24-inch bike. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm getting him. I think he's tall enough. He won't have any problem riding that. And that'll be better than having his knees hit him in the chest when he's riding.
Well, I saw him earlier today, and he was standing up and biking a bunch. I mean, he wasn't even bothering to sit on the seat.
Well, it's a BMX style bike. He could continue to ride it as a BMX bike if he wanted to do BMX type activities, riding it on dirt and stuff like that. But I'm going to get him a bike that's going to be kind of off-road, so I'm going to have to break down and buy a cyclocross bike so I can ride with him. I know, just twist my arm bike? Right now.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, the mountain bike you really can't take out on the road very easily.
I guess mine is so light that I don't have a problem doing it.
Well, I've got tires that are set at low pressure. It's a wider tire. It's a mountain bike. It's meant for trails. It's not meant for a mixed trail usage. Where a cyclocross bike is meant for a mixed trail usage. I could do anything he's going to be able to do on a bike, on a cyclocross bike. I could probably do some light mountain biking trails on a cyclocross bike. In fact, I'm planning on taking it over to Capitol View if I get a cyclocross bike and trying my luck out there to see how it goes.
Like, it's going to be ordered in a half an hour, folks.
it's expensive. Yeah. I've been trying to hold off because I can't just get like an entry level
cyclocross
bike. I got to get something that's carbon nice.
Of course.
Because I'm a bike snob.
Yes. That's all right.
Well, I mean, I was planning on using it in the winter and stuff as kind of a winter bike as well, and recovery bike rides. And it'll probably be the bike I'll ride a lot with my son as he gets going, because he might get too fast for my fixie.
Yeah.
Because he can move out. And he doesn't have any fear yet on the bike.
Hopefully he won't.
Most likely he won't.
Yeah, not for...
Unless he has a really bad crash and breaks some bones or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but even then.
That's my wife's fear. It's like, don't get hurt. So we're not to go to the hospital right now.
Yeah. Don't go to the hospital right now? No. Wait a couple months. Well, that's awesome. Anything else going on this past week?
No. Just watching them close down races. It looks like the Tour de France may not happen now.
I thought they were going
to... They're trying to push it back. The French sports, this isn't a priority for us. So. Now, the good news is it looks like the Bundesliga is going back in. Yay.
Okay.
That's German soccer. They're thinking about playing. There's not going to be any crowds, but...
Yeah.
At least they're playing.
At least they're playing, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't help endurance sports. Endurance sports have the problem of we need large crowds to be able to gather. I know you've been reading about how they could possibly do races in the life of social distancing. I don't see it.
I mean, you know, the Run Sign Up, that's one of the big platforms that you sign up for races. I know Active.com is another one. That's usually who I go through for triathlon. But Run Sign Up's the main running one. And because I'm a race director, I don't think they sent it to everybody, but they sent a huge document, and it's like, oh my God, how many people have been working on this thing? I mean, I sat there and drank 3 cups of coffee reading it. It was a lot of information.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I mean, I didn't even read the whole thing, but lots of different ideas about how a race could potentially happen. One of the funniest things, you know, like if you have, I think it was 4 runners across 6 feet apart from each other, and then going back in line 6 feet apart from each other. The LA Marathon start line would be 3.77 miles long. I was like, okay, well, let's not do that.
To me,
not feasible, you know.
Yeah, the problem I run into is this becomes like this academic exercise of how could we do this? But then reality always intrudes, and when you actually do something, it doesn't work because people are going to lie about their times. I mean, I've been in enough races where the dude in front of me is like a 8-9 minute swimmer in a 400 meter swim, and he's got a faster time than me, and you can just see him backing everybody up in the pool.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, that's why one of the things they talked about, so that you, let's say, you know, normally when you have a race and you have corrals and you got the fastest people in the front, blah, 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 walkers in the back. Well, having corrals, but have those corrals be mixed, have fast people, slow people, you know, all mixed so that nobody is very close to each other, and then maybe have a bigger gap in between. So, you know, things like that, not having water stops, make people carry their own water, you know, or have like a foot tank that you push with your foot. I don't know if you've ever seen those, like they usually have them outside of the Portageon. Have those so that people can refill their own water and not touch it.
But the problem with that is then they all stand around waiting for to get in line to go next.
Right. You know, I mean, the faster people come up, the slower people. This is just, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's just.
People obviously run sign up. I mean.
They have a vested interest in getting a race off. And so they're trying to think of everything they could potentially do in a race.
Exactly.
I don't see it. I just don't. I mean, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer. I don't know how you get that many people in a relatively confined space and not have interactions that go against the current
guidelines. I'm thinking in the fall. So what, 6 months from now, you know, what are we in? We're in April, almost May now. So, I mean, I'm looking at October because that's the race that I'm race director of. So that's what's on my mind.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, where are we going to be in mid-October? Let's say...
Well, I mean, the NFL came up with alternate schedules, one of which was starting around Halloween on a shortened season and pushing into like March or something. I know college football's thinking about doing spring football now. Ugh.
I mean, you know, they're thinking of different ways. I mean, the world is definitely different, but eventually we're going to have some kind of normal. But, you know, what Run Sign Up was doing, some of these ideas may even have to stay in place even when the world does open up.
See, once the world opens up, I think we'll be fine. Once you allow large groups to mingle, we go on our life as we've always done.
Hmm.
The real challenge is I don't see how you do endurance racing without there being some level of ability to gather largely. I mean, just think about like the finish line in a race. What are you going to start doing? Just moving people away from each other and, you know, having people like try to have a stick between you. Are you standing far? I mean,
races when I finish, people are gone. You know, there's not a big crowd at the end.
Oh, there's always people hanging around talking.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, getting rid of, like, one of the suggestions, don't, like, have a grab bag with the goodies. You know, when you get the bananas and granola bars and stuff, have those all together. Don't have it at all. You know, bring your own so that people are not reaching in and they're not congregating. Send the medals home.
But
you know,
people finish a race and they want to talk to, oh, how was that race? Everybody wants to talk to each other about how the race was and things of that nature.
But that's not...
That's just human nature is the thing. That's what people are going to naturally tend to do.
Right, but the race can do things to avoid, you know, people are going to do that, yes. But not having areas where... they all have to go to see their results, or they have to, you know, don't have the results, have them all texted, which is what I do, you know, mail the awards, stuff like that. I mean, things are going to look different and eventually maybe they'll go back, but possibilities, you know, people are trying desperately to make it so that we can do this again. Anyway.
The whole thing's crazy. I don't know. For some reason we've become into the thrall of experts. But whatever the experts say, this always cracks me up because I was thinking about this today. Is like if someone came to you and said, "I can do your you want to get your kitchen done," and the contractor comes to you and says, "I can do your kitchen for $5,000," and you're like, "Okay, that's within my budget. Let's go."
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, they come back and they say, "Well, it's really going to be like $50,000. I miscalculated." What are you going to do with that guy? You're going to fire their butt, put them out on the street. Yeah. Yet here we are. We had experts who grossly miscalculated what the numbers are, which is why we shut everything down. And yet we're still listening to them.
If they were
in the private sector, they would have been fired for gross negligence at that point. But we're still listening to them, and this is crazy to me. I don't understand why we still are.
That people are wanting answers that experts
can't give.
They can't give those.
Because they try to create models that are never going to be accurate.
Right, and there's so many different models, and people or, you know, media or whoever, I don't know who you want to blame, that we're looking at, you know, there's certain ones that are out there for the public to see, and there may be other ones that we just haven't seen, you know, because they're not as cheerful. I don't know.
I mean, models are always going to be bad, and there's reasons for this. I mean, I have background in math. I've studied chaos a little bit. I've studied artificial intelligence and things of that nature. And
since I have not studied math, tell me, because you mentioned chaos to me earlier before we started, what is that?
Chaos is a relatively new avenue in mathematics, and it's looking at order within what looks to be in order, where you can, if you look at chaos, like nature itself is very chaotic, Yet mm-hmm. leaves all tend to have very similar patterns, but they're all unique. Mm-hmm. How does this happen? How do you get this order within chaos? With okay. what something that appears to be chaotic in nature, i.e., us as humans, we can't see the patterns. We don't. It just looks like stuff's happening, but there's order to it. There's mm-hmm. an underlying order to it. So it's a mathematical study okay. of order and things that are kind of that appear to be non-ordered, and this creates effects that are unseen. Because if you see stuff that's going on that you can't put a number on or you can't put a value on, but it has an effect on the outcome of X, mm-hmm. then I can't tell you we're going to make it to X because I'm looking at some point over here, Y, because all my variables take me to Y. But this unseen, all these unseen pieces really are going to take me to X. And I have no way to model that because it appears to be noise. It appears to be background stuff gotcha. That I can't calculate, I can't see.
Okay.
And it takes you in a different direction. That's why models fail, is because they can't capture all the data. Now, there's other reasons they failed badly as well. They didn't have as much data, which right. makes you go, why are we modeling this if we don't have enough data to have good models?
Yeah, I mean, COVID is so new, there hasn't been enough time.
Yeah.
In my mind, for us to say, they're looking at children and they may not, why aren't they affected? It hasn't been around long enough for us to know why.
They're starting to figure some of this out.
They're starting to speculate, but they're still not going to know.
I know that Switzerland? They're going to start school back up here in May. They've determined that the virus load that kids carry is not enough to infect someone else.
Okay.
And therefore, they can't really transmit it. The reason you don't see a lot of kids with it is because they're getting it from adults and not among each other, because they can't actually transmit it to each other. They don't have enough viral load to make the transfer.
Interesting. Nation sure spread the flu, let me tell you that. Snotty noses, and as a teacher, believe me, they can transmit everything else. So that's interesting that they don't think that they can transmit this.
It's just an interesting, like I said, the data is starting to come in. It's just kind of wild, though, that we rely on these experts who really are kind of these ivory tower people that really don't sit in the real world. And the one that struck me recently is now we're going to all be required to wear masks when we go outside. I think that's actually going to be a rule that our governor decided to pass
outside,
here recently.
Like where?
Anywhere outside. We're supposed to wear masks sometime in May.
So like if I'm
May.
Running?
I didn't really dive down to that, but I think so. I think when you go out, and I'm like,
that's not going to happen.
Exactly.
And I'm it's hard enough for me to breathe when I'm running.
And I'm like, these masks are supposed to help us and everything. And I'm like, that's a very academic look at it. The mask, in theory, is going to do what? It's going to capture in the material. You're less likely to breathe it out on someone else. Mm-hmm. They're less likely to breathe it out on you. Now, for this to work, what has to happen, though? Well, the mask has to be something that's taken and either discarded when it's used. Because if I'm breathing into it, it's going to take maybe all of a minute or two before this thing becomes basically a cesspool of my germs. I mean, it's not going to take much for me breathing on this thing to become a cesspool of germs. It's because it's capturing 70-80% of whatever it is coming out. Now, what can I do to this mask? I can't touch it. If I touch it, what happens? All germs that viral mask that's stuck there is now on my hand. Now, has anybody ever worn a mask where they didn't touch it, adjust it? Or I know I've worn them in the summer. Bring up a lot of dust. You put those little masks on and stuff.
Yeah, mowing the grass.
Mowing the grass, whatever. I have never gone more than like 30 minutes without touching one. It's just human nature. You're not used to wearing it. It gets there. You want to adjust it.
Oh, I had no idea how much I touched my face until this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God.
And so you have this mask that we're going to wear and we're going to probably touch. And now all of a sudden our hands, which would probably not have much of the virus at all, is now loaded with viruses that we're touching stuff in stores and everything else. That's just human nature. Then it's like, okay, once you're done with the mask, when I pick it off, I shouldn't be touching it. I should be putting it, either disposing of it right then or putting it in some type of sealed bag so I can wash it. If I just throw it down on my car seat, which I see a lot of people do, now my car seat's infected.
That's where mine is.
You're probably going to pick it up to take it inside and clean it. again, now all that viral load that was on this, because it's supposed to last on things for multiple hours, is now on your hand. So now we are more likely to spread it than if we didn't wear masks at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if you find out that we actually spread it more by wearing the masks than not. And it's not the actual wearing the mask that spreads it, but the fact that it's the externals of having a mask that we're not used to wearing, the human nature aspects of it. That's why I say it's kind of this ivory tower of like, yeah, it would work if we do these things, which right. we have a hard enough time getting employees to wash their hands before after they go to the bathroom.
You have to have signs telling them. I know.
So how is this going to work well for us?
Well, I mean, at least people are becoming, at least with the hand washing thing, people are very vigilant about that now. Thank God. That's one benefit that's happened, I guess, out of all of this.
Well, now the funny thing about that was I was listening to a doctor over the weekend. He was talking about how that actually lowers your immune system if you're too sterilized of the state, because the immune system, like every other system, needs to be exercised to be healthy and be balanced. Right. And if we sterilize too much for too long and we don't go out and interact with other people, when we come out, we're likely to get sick. We may not get like COVID-19 or the flu, but we're going to get sick with something else. Yeah. Because we've been stuck inside for so long and our immune system is failing behind.
Oh my God, everything's new again.
But anyway, it's just something that struck me is like, why are we stuck with experts? Why don't we just like look at data and make decisions and not get caught up in
not
what the ivory tires want to do?
People need things interpreted, and unfortunately, you know, maybe it's not.
They haven't been right yet. And I don't necessarily blame them for being wrong. It's just they have been.
Yeah.
And once you're wrong, I don't understand why all of a sudden they're say has more value than anybody else's say, just because, like I said,
they get stuck between a rock and a hard place. It's like, okay, well, this is what I see could potentially happen, and if they're wrong and they backtrack, then well, but you know, we could go this way. Nobody believes them anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah, the whole thing is
it's you know, I mean, it's a tough. But thank God, thank God, I'm not in any position like that.
Oh God.
All right. Well, should we get back to our original topic we were going to talk about?
Well, you know, it's always good to get sidetracked.
We're good at that, especially these days.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we start looking at races and the fact that there's probably not going to be many this year, if any at all. And like, again, it's outside of our power. This becomes a real problem for those athletes who are a little more serious, who've been racing for a few years, whose identity a lot of times is tied to these races. When you get the serious athlete out there, a lot of times the races are a big chunk of who they are. And when you take that away for whatever reason, it becomes a source of emotional distress. It becomes a reason for depression, mm-hmm. so to speak. Generally, before this whole watch-em-a-thing happened, this would only happen in a couple cases, usually an injury.
Mm-hmm.
I would get injured before a race, and I'd miss it. I'd get depressed about the fact that I couldn't do it, and I might not be able to train. This also will occur a lot of times at the end of a season. I get through my race calendar, my race calendar year,
right,
and it might be 6 months before I can race again. I get this downtime. I get some post-season blues,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times that's part of the reason people will continue to train year-round. Right. Rather than taking off season, because they don't want
to
face up
with... Well, they don't know what to do with themselves and not having that...
Yeah, their identity is kind of being taken away from them, that training for that next race, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And it creates a system of depression for people. And look, we're not psychologists. We can't help you with depression. That's not really kind of what we're here for. We're here to say, hey, we understand that this is a time where you've got to be guarded. And that's really what we're talking about, is trying to be guarded from, hey, there is an emotional downtime if you are tied to races. If racing is so important to you that you're always talking about the next race, you're always focused on that next race, okay, there's not that race. Be aware that that could potentially be a source for additional stress in your life. It could be something that makes you feel down.
Yeah.
And just pay attention to it. I mean, that was one of the reasons I've wanted to talk about going out and having fun on the bike, having fun in the run and doing different things, to try to avoid the downside of being without a race. Now, the long-term solution to this is something that I've really come to in the last few years and have really preached, is disassociating with racing in general. Racing shouldn't be the end goal. Races should just be tests to see how good of an athlete you are. Really, what I want to do now is focus on becoming a better athlete, better runner, better triathlete, better swimmer, biker, whatever it is.
Right.
Focus on being better at that, and the race has just become a test to see if I have improved within my sport of choice or whatever I really enjoy doing and love doing, and stay focused on those elements of it and not racing. Because in this environment now, while I'm not focused on racing, my focus is on getting better as an athlete. Well, I can't swim. That sucks. I can't get better at swimming.
That is still definitely a downer.
Running, there are some skills you can do there, and I'll do some of those as the summer progresses to some extent. But of the technical sports left, there's really, because I do triathlon, the three sports the most technical are biking and swimming. Running is probably the least technical of the three.
Yeah.
There are skills to be learned, and that's why we talked about going out and doing drills and working on improving your posture, improving your technique, improving the pieces that make getting better at running
right. Improving possible. Improving your running form and all that.
This is a great time to get a coach to do, say, a run gait analysis.
Yeah, get somebody to film.
Or have someone film and get some analysis on what you're doing and start correcting those things.
Mm-hmm.
If those corrections lead to you being slower in the short term, guess what? It doesn't matter. You're not racing. You got time to make those changes and get faster 4 or 5 months down the road. You don't have to worry about the short-term impact of radically changing your running style.
Yeah.
From a biking standpoint, there's always skills to be had on biking.
Oh, gosh.
Cadence, shifting, cornering, all kinds of skills you can learn.
Yeah.
As we get going and it starts drying out for the summer, I'll probably go out and do a lot more mountain biking because that's such a great balance and skill test for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go ride with my bike now, my son wants to ride his bike, I'll take my fixie out. I'll spend a lot of time doing track stands and work on balance and work on just really tight turns on a fixie and just having some fun with that. Those are all skills that I can work on and get better. This summer, heck, I'll probably continue working on transitions just to make sure I stay sharp as a skill. So there's always skills to be worked at.
And those are all things that normally at this time of year, you don't have any time to work on.
Yeah.
You know, because you're training. So it's like, wow, it's very freeing in a lot of ways to have all this time to go have fun and play around and improve things instead of, oh my God.
Instead of always being focused on fitness.
I got to do this many miles. I got to do this. I got to do this. You know, no, you don't have to now.
Yeah, most people spend their whole time focused on fitness and not the skill aspect of it. Now that we don't have to worry about fitness, we can focus on the skills even more.
Yeah.
You know, normally I try to get that on the off season when you have this gap between
But it's training. Hard on, you know, biking especially is there
can be hard in the wintertime.
It can really be hard in the wintertime. So I think about, you know, some athletes that I know that are nervous going down hills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and that's something that you just got to practice. Well, hey, got all the time in the world to practice now.
That is very true.
You know?
One of the things that I've always had trouble explaining to people a lot of times is the reason you don't want to focus on a race is because you can't control race day.
Have you ever had a race canceled, like, right beforehand? It stinks.
Race is canceled beforehand. You get injured. There's a death in the family. You get sick the day before. But now, unfortunately, I've got, like, the ultimate. It's like, you could have a virus come down and strike away your whole season.
There's a pandemic that is just taking care of all of that for us.
It becomes much easier for me to explain the fact that you can't control race day.
Yeah.
You can't. There's too many things that are outside of your control on race day. And this becomes exhibit A whenever I talk about this in the future.
There could be a pandemic.
So if you're starting to feel the blues, if you feel... Generally, it's because you're tied to racing. Your identity is tied to racing. Yeah. You find something about it, the race, that gives you a higher sense of purpose, whether it be you can brag to all your friends and you like all the adoration you get from people, like, oh, I did an Ironman. Oh, you did that. I can't do that. How could you do something like that? And you get that with marathons and other things. Like, oh my gosh, how can you do something like that? That's amazing. You know, because they don't do it and it just seems like this amazing task that's impossible for them. And that can be really cool to have all these people say, hey, you're this phenomenal athlete. You may or may not be compared to your peers that actually race, but to them who don't do anything,
you work with or whatever, it's a big
deal. You're like this amazing person. And that can be addicting. The race results, getting that PR. Oh, yeah. I've run faster than I've ever
run. You're looking at the results and say, oh, yes, I beat her.
Or I beat that person. There's little things that give you these adrenaline rushes. Are those things that affect you? This is when you find that out. Because you'll start to feel down about what's happened. Oh, man, I don't have a race. I don't feel like going out and training. Well, why?
Yeah.
It might be because you're tied to that race a little bit more than you even thought you were possible. You were tied to those results in the racing.
I mean, you know, on the same hand, it's okay to be bummed out that you don't get to race. I mean, you know, there's a whole grieving process that, you know, that we've all gone through. I've been going through it for a few weeks now, you know, and I'm still fighting it, as you can tell. I've got plans for the fall. You know, Brian has accepted and he's done.
Oh, well, I mean, I've...
but
for me, the races aren't... I mean, because I never had a schedule for the year. I was going to race at certain times of the year and pick races when they're going to be.
I mean, I've got a couple that are, you know, it's like, well, I guess... I'm hopeful for everybody and even and just for the racing community that we're going to be able to get back sooner than later.
Well, the downside is that you're going to end up with a bunch of racing companies that aren't going to make it out of this.
Yeah.
That's the real bummer of this. And it's going to take years potentially to reestablish races because a bunch of races will potentially go away altogether.
Right.
And if we're in an economic downturn, people aren't going to be jumping up to start racing companies. And you're not going to get a lot of new race companies. And that's going to take years for that to organically grow again.
Right.
And that's kind of the bummer out of some of this.
Well, and part, you know, and then since we don't know what the guidelines are going to be when we do start coming back into large groups, are races going to be limited in numbers? I don't know. I mean, they may be. I mean, the start lines are may look totally different. Things, you know, we don't know what the future's going to look like.
You're going to have a 3-mile transition to your bike. 5K from the swim to your bike.
Yeah.
So, like, in triathlon, I just don't see how you can have a transition area that's big enough and spread out that much.
Well, and that's why I'm thinking, you know, and this is just pure speculation. I have no idea, but I'm thinking that large races may take place over a number of days, you know, they can make those transitions areas smaller.
Well, I mean, I look at a transition area and a race company that does transitions. Now, there's a reason they pack 7 bikes to a transition rack, because they only have so many transition racks.
Mm-hmm.
If I only have, say, 20 transition racks, well, then I can have 140 people race. But if you're saying I can only have 1 or 2 people at a transition rack, now I can only have 40 people. How do I make money on a race with 40 people where I had 140 before?
Right.
And you might be able to spread things out, but I just don't know how a race director makes money.
Well, that's are that way. You know, it's like we've got to... I mean, realize that when races do come back, you know, there's probably going to be a whole lot of sticker shock because they're going to have to, you know, more transition, you know, they're going to have more racks or, you know, there's going to be a lot of new investments made to...
But who's going to have the money to make those investments?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, exactly, because they've lost all their money this year. So,
this is restaurants.
Hence I signed up for a virtual race.
Well, restaurants have the same problem. It's like, okay, we're going to open up, but you can only have half the tables or a quarter of the tables.
Right.
Like, how do you make money with a quarter of the tables? I mean, the reason you're packing the tables together is so you can have enough people in there to make money.
I mean, I think a lot of the curbside stuff for the restaurants that are surviving right now, you know, I think a lot of that's going to stay. I mean, they're figuring out how to do it. You know, I think a lot of things that we're seeing are going to continue on to some degree after this is when we're free to go again. Restaurant, you know, I know, like, I'm teaching fitness classes virtually now. Well, it's going really, really well. Granted, everybody's stuck in their home, so why not? But the convenience of it has been great for everybody. It's like, oh, yeah. Man, I'm running late. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. Click. There's my class and my social group and everything, and I don't have to go anywhere.
To some extent,
you know.
Once the gyms open back up, I imagine that people will want to go and do the socializing aspects of it.
But some people are still going to be nervous about that. And, you know, I think the virtual stuff that's been going
on. Which makes you wonder how the gyms get going again. I mean, if you can't have full population, you can't bleed money forever. That's the whole challenge of all this. It's wild. It's from a financial standpoint. This is where you're going to see the chaos play a role, and you're beginning to see stuff like they're talking about, like the food chain's been disrupted.
It's been disrupted pretty badly.
And
actually,
with the new regulations on all these meat packaging plants and stuff like that, they're not able to process meat as fast. And now, like, cattle farmers and stuff are having to slaughter their animals because they can't sell them. And
the trickle effect that
that's going to increase the prices of meat. That's just one aspect. This happens with toilet paper. Toilet paper ran into the same thing with toilet paper. I don't know why people needed a lifetime supply of toilet paper. I loved was the memes of, it's 2024. Or no, it was 2074. It's like, yes, the final roll of toilet paper from my grandparents bought toilet paper back in 2020. It's an exciting day.
Such a weird time. Oh, my God. Well, we kind of got off our topic, but that's all right.
Well, yeah, we did. We've been all over the place today.
It all ties together, you know, trying to find ways to keep optimistic, to, you know, not get down to the dumps. And if you are showing any signs, you know, of serious depression, please, you know, call somebody, get some help. Seek some professional help, because it is not us when it comes to that.
Because my suggestion is just kind of pay attention to your emotional state as you go through. And if you feel yourself getting a little down, especially about training, is like, okay, start asking why. Because that's really what you need to do, is you need to figure out why you're down about training. Me, I'm like, this is great. I can go out and bike every day. I don't really have any set targets I'm trying to hit. I can go out and ride hard if I'm feeling good one day. I can go out and ride easy. I can try all kinds of fun, different things. Mm-hmm. For me, this is great. I don't have any problem with this. But if I'm used to that structure, I'm going hard, I'm getting ready to race, and that's not there, well, I feel directionless when I'm going out training. I don't feel like training. That's a sign that, hey, maybe my priorities are a little off, and I need to think about this. Why did I get into this sport?
Mm-hmm.
What's the fun? How can I have fun again and make this an enjoyable sport?
Another thing that I know for me in particular, and for several people I know, is just not having the camaraderie, not having that running group. I mean, it's killing.
That's another
area. A lot. I mean, we have 10, 15, 20, 25 people sometimes for a 5 a.m. running group, and it's not meeting anymore.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I mean, it is really tough.
Check
on your friends.
So you got the social aspect of it. You get the effect like injury. I mean, I remember getting injured in my first or second year of racing, and I had a race, and I couldn't do it because I had IT band issues.
Mm.
And I was so mad and just so frustrated and angry for weeks because I wasn't going to be able to race. That's a warning sign when you look back. When I look back, and I remember it was either after my second year of really training hard, and I got to the end of the season, and I took a month off just trying to decompress from the season, and I felt down. I felt kind of lost. Because
after I finished Boston, it was like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, wow. And it didn't go the way I wanted either. So, I mean, I felt lost for quite a while.
And that's normal. I mean, that's kind of what I wanted to kind of get here, is that these are known things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're in this weird situation. It not really an injury. It's an unknown time. It's probably a little longer than an
injury. We all feel great, and we can't do anything.
And we can't do anything. But these negative emotions are natural. The fact that we're not being able to go out and do the socializing like we used to. The fact that we don't have any direction to our training potentially. Yeah. These are all things that are natural and can cause negativity. Now you take on top of it all the news of the world that's going on out there, that, and the battles that everybody's having with each other on Facebook. God, I haven't gone on Facebook in a year and weeks.
Probably a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't need to be on Facebook.
I just put cute little chicken pictures.
With no, see, I what I do with Facebook is I'll go on and troll and then log off and never log back on. Oh, no, I'm a professional troll when it comes to things like Facebook.
Oh, it was you. You must have aliases. No,
I'm all about the trolling. But
you're awful.
You know, that's a lot of it. Stay off. So you have the stresses of the real world like that that come in. You got the fact that you don't have the races that you use as a big lifeline for yourself. All these things can come negatively on you. And if you feel it, just pay attention. If you feel it, change something up.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, I'm not training for a direction. Now I'm training for fun. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out and see the sun and ride around and at least get me out of my house.
It's beautiful out right now, too. Oh, my God. I mean, the wildflowers. Everybody's yards look great, too.
Yes.
Everybody's home and mowing. The gardens look great. I'm looking at people's houses. I've been having a great time.
Yeah,
but it took a little while.
You have to recognize that something's wrong, and then you have to change your mindset.
Yeah,
and the nice thing is if you begin to change your mindset now, you can carry this on into your training in the future. Of now, my mindset is I'm going to have fun. I'm doing this to get better as an athlete. The races, if they come, that's a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go from
and hopefully I still know how to swim. No, sorry.
Yeah, what's swimming?
Yeah.
I don't even know what swimming is.
I know.
Is that something to do with water?
I don't even like it and I miss it. Well, we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, 3-Sport Endurance Coaching. If you're looking for focus right now, if you're kind of lost, give us a call and we can help you. Instead of just randomly training,
we can make it fun. Maybe
we can make it fun. Hopefully, yeah. We're working with we've got a couple athletes right now that are brand new that have never done triathlon before. This is a great time if you were just a runner, you want to learn how to bike, you used to like biking, now's a great time to.
You can become a duathlete because you're not becoming a triathlete. Become a duathlete,
yeah, because we can't help you with the swimming right now. We can show you videos.
The good news is if they don't open the pools for a long time, open water is coming just around the corner.
I know. Thank God. Thank
and hopefully
God.
They won't be like in police boats going around patrolling the coast to see if people are swimming together.
Oh, but if you get a whole lot of time on your hands and you just need a little bit more focus, give us a call. Check us out on go3sport.com. Glad for all of you to join us, and we will talk to you next week.